It's gray and overcast here in London. I'm Gab, he's Jules. Maybe it's gray and overcast because the Premier League title is going up north.
Yes, maybe.
And presumably, look, we've got a packed show today because there was midweek football in Serie A. There was Paris Saint-Germain in the Coupe de France, cutting it very, very close. UEFA's taking disciplinary action against the three rebel clubs. They could be kicked out.
La Liga.
And, of course, La Liga, which is where we begin, because we have to begin. It is, I saw statistically, it was the tightest title race in like 30 years. Sevilla, theoretically, we'll get to them. They won, but they're basically out. Atletico Madrid, of course, winning. They're top of the table. Real Madrid play on Thursday night. But Barcelona playing first on Tuesday against the Levante team with nothing to play for, and they throw it away.
Incredible, Gab. Incredible. They were 2-0 up in the first half where they played some good stuff, but also I thought short at times that the 3-5-2 was just not the right tactic and not the right formation for that game. And yet,
maybe with those players, because Dembele up and down the way, you know.
It makes no sense. There's a point in the first half where Dembele, who's right wing back, has to defend, and Tonio, who's a good left back, you know, for La Liga, he's a decent left back in La Liga, the Levante left back, and Dembele is trying to chase the ball down in his own box almost, end up slipping. Tonio gets the ball, and if he had put a better cross in, that could have been a huge chance and maybe a goal for Levante, because Dembele should not be in that position in the first place. He should not be defending. I don't know what Koeman was thinking of, but still, they were 2-0 up and they looked like they were in control.
Yeah, it's that ability when you're 2-0 up to see out the game, to manage the lead. Now, admittedly, you're up against a team that have no motivations, but that also means they have no pressure. And of course, they still have El Comandante Morales.
Morales.
It's just remarkable to coach who goes so close. And I'm assuming now we're both going to agree it's pretty much lights out for La Liga, right?
They're 4 points behind with two games to go. So, and they have the head-to-head against them, against Athletic. So it's actually 5 points.
And against Real Madrid as well.
Yes, but if you just think about Athletic and Barcelona and that battle for the title, so it's 5 points in two games to catch. So they need Atleti to lose both games and them to win both games to basically be La Liga champion. And
it would be one draw, one loss for Atleti, right? And then because if they get 6 points,
exactly.
But still,
you know, it's so complicated. But I thought they took it for granted, and in the second half they came back with not the same intentions than in the first half. I thought Koeman messed it up again massively by putting Sergio Roberto on at halftime for Araujo. Why? In which world do you play Sergio Roberto as a centre-back in a back three in a game like this that you cannot afford?
I don't think he's ever done before. And I think the thinking was, okay, I have another passer on there. We keep the ball. We slow the game down. We control the tempo. Maybe we nick something at the other end. I can see his logic in it.
No, I don't see it.
You have to... You have to weigh up the player, right? Sergio Roberto is still somebody who was out for a long time.
Shouldn't be playing
back
for Barcelona anyway, Sergio Roberto. He's not good enough.
I'm not as down on Sergio Roberto as you are, but he's obviously not the right context for him. And I wonder, too, if in a game like this, we would have expected more from... Obviously, Busquets was back. We talked about how much he was missed, you know, in the last game when he had to come off after half an hour. I mean, was this a game where maybe the leaders failed a little bit? Because when you can see the trend turning against you, right? Yeah. Koeman's made his choices, but all Koeman could do is make his choices, good or bad. It's the guys on the pitch that you expect them to stand up. Is that fair, or is that...
Yeah, I thought Piqué on the Leon goal, the third goal from Levante, is too slow to react, and he's on the floor, and he's not good defending at all. I thought Busquets was chasing shadows in that second half, and they were just too quick around him, which has been a problem anyway.
You know, Messi turned up, though.
And Messi scored a great first goal, but that second half from Messi was still a bit... was not the greatest, you know, not the greatest Messi that we've seen this season.
29 goals still for Lionel Messi this season.
One in the game against Atleti, in the two games against Atleti, two games against Real Madrid, don't look at me like this, and two games against Sevilla, he scored one goal.
There you go with the Messi hate.
I love him, and he's the GOAT, but he scored one in the six games that really mattered, and 28 in the other games that didn't matter so much.
All right, Jules, let's unpack this a little bit more, but let's start. It's highly unlikely they're going to win La Liga. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to change that much. You know, a little bit more prize money or whatever, a little bit less pressure to keep Ronald Koeman, perhaps.
Yeah, but it's two seasons in a row now. they don't win La Liga. So they won 18-10s up to 2019, and now it's two in a row
right.
where you don't win it.
Okay, but it's not exactly news that there's serious issues at the club.
No, true.
So, and Joan Laporta, he can't be blamed for what happened before because he came in, he's inherited the situation with the enormous debt, with, and we'll get into this later, with the disciplinary action taking against them because of the Super League, with, and above all, with Messi's contract expiring. Now, I find the Messi situation really interesting because you'll recall, right? So the Bureau of Facts comes. All these people who are much closer to Barcelona than we are saying like, no, this time he's serious. He's really going to go. Remember, our interpretation was always, but, you know, we're interpreting from afar. We're like, but this is stupid for him to announce now that he's going, right? Well, the logical thing is for him to say, I'm going to stay on these terms. I want these guarantees. I want this influence. I'm not happy with Bartomeu. Then it felt as if everything kind of turned. I mean, Laporta saying the priority is keeping Lionel Messi. What is your sensation right now about whether Messi stays or goes? Because you know, obviously he's a free agent at the end of the season.
I really wonder if he maybe keeps changing his mind. So there was a time, and we said, where Koeman was doing the right things and the new formation works and they won the Copa del Rey and they were playing okay and they were, the young players look very promising and Pedri and Ilaic and then those guys, and you say, okay, if you're Messi, De Jong, if you're Messi, this is appealing. You can stay. Laporta is your friend. You've got a really close relationship with him. He seemed to be okay with Koeman. Now, surely today, if you're Lionel Messi and you're looking at what's happening in the last 3 weeks, those defeats, the fact that, I mean, I think Koeman's tactics are a mess right now, that there's no La Liga title, and there's the same issues that we've seen in the past before. I mean, it's not Koeman's fault what happened in Liverpool or in Rome or in Lisbon or in the last few years, all those embarrassing moments, which shows that this is still there. And now it looks very unlikely that Koeman is there next season. So if you're Messi, you think, okay, it will be another new manager. There's clearly deeper issues than just, you know, what happened this season. And then maybe he's thinking like, is this really what I want? Do I really want to start from scratch again? That manager is not going to be Xavi, as we will mention later on the show as well.
We don't know that.
No, we don't know that. But at least Xavi signed a new deal with his current club.
Well, actually, this is important. Because if you were Xavi and they put money in front of you, of course you sign a new deal, right? Of course you do. It just simply means it'll be a little more maybe there's an out to the deal. Maybe it means that you get a little bit more money if Barcelona do choose you and you do choose to come back.
It also maybe means that Barcelona will have to pay money to Al-Sadd to get him.
Yeah, but we don't know if he signed the deal with Al-Sadd saying like, okay, Al-Sadd, I've committed for another 2 years unless I get a call from Barcelona. I mean,
maybe.
I don't.
Maybe.
I mean, I look, if you're Xavi, it's the most obvious thing to do, right? You insulate yourself. It's not like Barcelona are the only team in the world who might want Xavi, right? So, I mean, if I was, Xavi's a smart guy. I mean, I don't know for certain.
But you would not tie yourself up.
I wouldn't tie myself up to Al-Sadd for 2 years when I know that Barcelona can't afford to pay, or it's difficult for them to go and pay a penalty clause, right?
No, But do you see my point about
Messi?
A month ago, maybe it looked promising for Messi.
Here's the thing, right?
And
you can't go and base your future, especially when you have a short future because Messi's older, on results this week, results that week, and so on. I think you need to sit down and you put a value on the things in your life, right? You put a value on your relationship with the club. You put a value on how much faith you have in Laporta. You put a value on your family and uprooting your family going somewhere else. Mm. You put a value on who else might want you and on what terms and how you'll fit in there and how you relate to the manager and the players around you. You put a value on money as well because, look, I don't see how he can stay without taking a big pay cut.
Yeah.
I just don't see how that can happen.
Yeah.
But if he goes somewhere else, he'll probably have to take a big pay cut anyway. Maybe not to the same degree, obviously not to the same degree, right? Because the economics of football have essentially changed, right? And you go to Laporta and you say, okay, Joan, this is what I want. I want this much money, and it's going to be less, and I'll work with you on that. I want to say in the new manager, or to keep Koeman, but whatever. You know, you're not going to go and pick somebody I don't like or force Koeman to stay if I don't want him, or sack Koeman if I decide I want Koeman to stay.
Yeah.
Right? And you say, what is your plan going forward? What is Gerard Pique going to stick around? Is Busquets, you know, what is our plan? What can we actually realistically hope to do? Because I don't want to get my news from picking up, you know, Sport or El Mundo Deportivo and see, oh, we're going to sign Neymar and Mbappe and Haaland and all together, because I know this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. I can read. I can see. What exactly is a club debt situation? If I don't fully understand it because I'm not a trained accountant, let me bring my trained accountant in. Let me understand this.
Yeah.
I would assume that this is what Messi's doing behind the scenes.
Definitely.
And if you're Laporta, if you can be honest with him, you can turn it into a win. I mean, right now, I think if you're Laporta, simply getting Messi to stay when the guy before you, you know, had Messi sending him the bureau fax telling him he was going to leave, already that's a win, right? Already that forgives.
But there's no way Messi will agree to stay if he doesn't know who's going to be the manager next season.
That's why you have to tell him. You have to make him part of the conversation. I think what you need now is trust. You need trust between Laporta.
No, you're right.
And look, to what degree are you going to trust Laporta, given that ultimately, I'm not saying, because you're watching, Joanne, I'm not saying you're untrustworthy, but, you know, you're still essentially A, a lawyer, and B, a politician, right? Yeah. In my world, those are the just two categories of people, as you know, I dislike the most, right? So he has to win him over like that. I think that has to be the starting point for any kind of Barcelona, you know, evolution.
Koeman can't stay, right? We agree on that. And I'm not talking about, like, okay, who can come in then? Because you, Barcelona, should not keep a manager by default.
No.
This should not happen. So if we just look at how the season went from start to finish, assess what went well, and they did some good things, as we said. They had a long unbeaten run in La Liga. Okay, they got battered in the Champions League, but they've won none of the big games, apart the Juve one. They're not going to win La Liga, and it's been a very disappointing end of the campaign when at some point they looked like the favourite to go and win it. I think he's lost his way massively. And you know, I've never been a big fan, but we praised him when we had to, and that's fair enough. But I cannot see, even if he's got another year on his contract, how he could stay. I cannot see what kind of reaction he can get from this squad. I cannot see what reaction he can bring himself to change things next season.
I would agree with you that, from my perspective, it makes more sense for Koeman to go than for Koeman to stay. However, if Koeman going means bringing in a brand name manager who's going to want guarantees in terms of how much you're going to spend and whatever is going to cost you a lot of money, especially if that manager might not be Messi's favorite, then, like I said, I would put the manager conversation to one side. And really, I would say there's very few players in the history of the game I would ever say this about. Mm. But I say Messi's more important. So you sit down with him and say, Lionel, help us decide. Now, not entirely up to you, but help us decide. Because I think Koeman, in terms of man management, has done a good job. You know, generally speaking, you haven't had people speaking out of turn or attacking the manager. I think he has other limitations, which are very, very obvious.
Yeah.
But look, it's going to be a difficult 12 months going forward.
Mm.
Now, that said, I just quickly wanted to run through the squad because I don't think they're in such a bad position as some people suggest, right? Ter Stegen, fine, right? We agree. Pique is admittedly a bit of an issue as he gets older. Maybe you can negotiate a pay cut if he wants to keep playing, or maybe he moves upstairs. You work it out.
Mm.
Longley, I don't think is a problem. He's not a superstar, but he's not a problem. Yeah. Araujo, nah, is a solid player anyway. Yeah. Mingueza, who I think nobody likes, I didn't like, but as a third defender,
as a squad player,
he's okay. As a squad player, it's fine.
You might get Eric Garcia, who
doesn't drive me.
No,
I'm not wild about Eric Garcia, but if it's Eric Garcia on a free and he understands the situation, then
why not?
That's not going to hurt. Obviously, you would like to move Umtiti. You might not be able to. At right back, if you have to spend another season with Dest and Sergio Roberto, I think you're okay, and you got Mingueza there too.
Emerson is coming back from his loan at Betis as well, and I think he's the best Barcelona right back, although he hasn't played for them this season.
He probably is, but you're in that situation where Emerson is actually a saleable asset.
Completely.
Right. So maybe you can raise a little bit of money there.
Yeah.
Left back, I think Jordi Alba had a tremendous end to the season, and I think you can still get a couple good years out of him.
Mm.
In midfield, again, Busquets.
It's a conundrum for me, Gab. I don't know. Yes, at times, of course, he's been great. And he's still a genius in what he knows how to do, which is control the pace of a game. But he can't run anymore.
No.
I mean, I know he's never really been able to, but even less now.
I think there are games when you get away with Busquets and games that you won't, but your core, Busquets and De Jong, Pjanic, again, ideally you would move him somewhere else if you can. That might be very difficult. I think Elias, I don't know if he's ready to become a regular part of the rotation. And of course, Pedri's great. I think you do need another body in there. Just somebody in terms of effort. Doesn't even need to be, unless you think Sergio Roberto can play midfield, which you don't believe he can.
Thank you.
Further up.
But then what? So Ricky Puig, you sell and raise some money. Carlos Alenia, you sell and you get some money. And potentially,
I don't know what money you're going to get for these guys in this market. I think you might need to loan them and hope that they do well, and then maybe you get some money back. I mean, Alenia hasn't exactly torn it. He went to the wrong club.
Yeah, probably.
But and then further up, I think, you know, that's obviously the issue, because Griezmann. Oh, we have Coutinho too. Let's not forget.
Oh God, I'd forgotten about him.
I mean,
surely his future is limited at the club. And again, I don't know where you can send him and who will buy him at what price.
You loan him somewhere. You pay some of his wages. You reduce the wage bill. I think that is the best solution, The new manager says, you know, I can relate to Coutinho. We're on the same wavelength. We can work together well.
Yeah.
Griezmann is another one. Again, I would sell him if you could, but you can't. So, boom, make it work. Griezmann, Messi.
Dembele.
And then you need a center forward. To be honest, if you can get a center forward on a free transfer.
What, Sergio Aguero?
Memphis?
But Memphis is not the center forward that they need.
It's not the type of center forward that they need.
It's not the profile that they need. It's not a profile that is going
to
work.
If I can get Aguero to come on a 2-year deal or even a 1+1 deal, like a Cavani type deal.
Yeah.
And I say, Sergio, you made a ton of money. You got to come and you got to give me a house discount. You want to play for Barcelona, go back to Spain, great.
With Messi.
You get to play with Messi. Maybe Messi takes a pay cut and gives it to Aguero. I don't care. But something like that, as long as you don't want to be tied into those long-term monster contracts.
Yeah.
If you can do all that, then you can reduce your wage bill. You know, not net out in terms of your spending the summer, and still have a competitive team with some of these guys who I think can get better. And Ansu Fati's back. We haven't mentioned him.
He'll be back at some point,
That's a game changer.
Yeah, it should be.
It gives you a lot of options. So I'm not as negative.
No.
I don't think they'll be favorites to win La Liga next year. But if they get a manager who Messi likes, and if Messi resigns and they make these basic steps. Now, if they start, you know, borrowing more money to go and, let's spend 80 million on Gravenberch, and I'm going to be like, no.
Definitely.
This will come back to bite.
But there's also a lack of character, Gabi, in that team that we saw in the Granada game, that we saw again in the Levante game, that we saw against PSG, where they lack personality. I think there's something there that is missing that you can't just replace by keeping this squad together and going get Eric Garcia or Memphis Depay.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point. I don't normally like it when people talk about character and personality, because I'm like, it's all fuzzy stuff.
Yeah.
But this is where it has to become Frankie de Jong's team, because he has the character.
Yeah.
This is where you have to have a natural thing where, sorry, Messi's obviously the leader, but Frankie, you're going to be our leader, you know, in terms of in the trenches. You're going to be the guy. You're going to be what Gerard Piqué was. Okay, and, you know, if Gerard's there, he can help. But this has to become your team, be your team for the next 5 years. If you can do that, you know, a top four finish, assuming, of course, you don't get a 2-year ban from the Champions League, which we'll be getting to later in the show. Yeah. But again, I don't think the future is as dark.
No, but there's still a lot of issues to sort out.
If you get these big calls right, and if Messi collaborates.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Manchester United losing to Leicester, or Manchester United C team, as you put it,
yeah.
Losing to Leicester on Tuesday night, of course, meant that the obvious, what we already knew happened, which is that Manchester City would become Premier League champions. It's the third time in 4 years under Pep Guardiola. He said it was the most difficult league title of his career. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, I think so. In the sense, I think the one... So not the 100 points they were working on the league, no problem. The one when they beat Liverpool by a point, 98 points to 97, I think was tough because of the title race and because they were behind in January and that big game.
And one slip up.
Yeah, could have cost them. But I think maybe that was more psychologically in the sense, okay, let's do what we do and try to be as efficient. This one, he had to change. He had to change so many things.
So before we get to this one, I would have thought some of the ones at Barcelona... when you know you had that insane situation between him and Mourinho. And Mourinho, and you had all the Clásicos in Europe, and I mean,
but those teams were still.
That is when it felt. This is, I guess, what's different is this is very difficult, but that one I think felt more draining because remember those were the times that every year he'd come out in January and be like, "I'm going to leave at the end of the season. It's too much. I've too much invested," and I wonder if maybe. He didn't, because he was younger then, you know, so many books have been written about Pep Guardiola or whatever. Mm. Maybe he was younger, maybe he took it more personally because, no disrespect, but obviously his ties with Barcelona inevitably are going to feel stronger and more emotional. Maybe because of the continuous grind of the media, because let's face it, people here complain about the media, and sometimes the media here, when they get something in, you know, when they get obsessed with something, they will go and they can become a complete pain in the butt. But in general, it's not like that. In general, if you're providing results, you don't have people showing up at your door. You don't feel compelled. You know, he's at Barcelona. I know somebody used to work there, and he said, like, you know, the manager gets phone calls from board members, friends of board members, continuously. They call up and say, "Oh, why did you play him? Why did you do this? Just some advice. You're doing great." All of this is just incredibly draining.
But maybe he meant it's the hardest one. Because of what happened on the pitch, not so much the things around there.
I think it's that.
You know, they were eighth at Christmas. They had been 14 at some point earlier. They lost to Leicester at home. It was humiliating. The defeat at Spurs was humiliating.
The injuries as well, which we've kind of forgotten about. But we went from thinking Kevin De Bruyne was the most important player in the world to the fact that all of a sudden the guy gets injured and you don't notice.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think he also had to change his approach on, okay, let's be not more defensive because they had also very good defenses last season and the season before. They conceded less chances, less goals than they actually have this season. However, they're certainly more solid this season because they don't press as aggressively all the time than they used to. They don't do as much running as they used to. They certainly, when they have the ball, they control it and deal with it far better, I think, than before, where maybe they tend to try to go forward too quickly. Whereas now, they're so much more in control than what they were before, and I think it's tiring for the opposition.
What I find incredible is that most people would probably say the three most important players are, and we've always said this, you know, there's no star player, so it's hard to tell the most important one. But this season, three most important players, most people would agree, are Ruben Dias, Gundogan, and Phil Foden, right? In terms of the season as a whole, right? You can debate one or the
other.
And
De Bruyne a bit. Still.
But if we'd been sitting here 12 months ago and I said to you, "Jules, say you're going to win the title." You say, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And I told you, the three most important players are going to be Ruben Dias, who's this guy who's still in Portugal. Gundogan, who, you know, is basically a squad midfielder or was a squad midfielder last year. And Phil Foden, who's very young and not playing very much, you would have said, this is not going to happen. It's not going to work out this way. I think few people would have predicted the definitive move away from the center forward, Foden's development, Gundogan, who I believe is a top scorer this season.
Yeah, he is, 16 goals. So the new role,
I mean, this is remarkable. What we're seeing here is just special.
It is very special, and Ruben Dias had an incredible impact, as we said, very likely to the one Bruno Fernandes had on Manchester United or Virgil van Dijk on Liverpool. However, he's 23, had never played outside of Benfica and Portugal before. For him to come and do this is just wow.
Jose, I have to say, when I look at the broader Man City project with their ownership, and everything that's happened, the financial fair play, the government, and in Abu Dhabi with its human rights issues, you know, people who don't like City come out and say, well, it's sports washing. You know, they're doing this so that they can appear legitimate and whatever. My question to you is, I find Man City incredibly likable on the pitch because I truly admire the job that they've done. I truly admire the humility in this side with these players, how they go blue collar. Have people's perceptions of the ownership changed? Like, well, I guess what I'm saying is, can both things be true? Can people still have whatever views they had about the Emirati regime and the money that was spent, the resources? Yeah. And also at the same time, just say, man, you had a lot of resources, but you took them and you ran with it and you created something really special.
Yeah, I hope so, Gab. I really hope so. And yeah, of course, you could disagree with what the Emiratis are doing and the politics there and the lack of, you know, human rights. I don't know anything. Same with Qatar. You can disagree with the fact that a state can own a football club. Of course you can. You can argue that they have far more money than everybody else. Right. Yeah, of course it's true. But you still cannot not acknowledge how well they've built this club. This is a machine. And again, I go back to this second leg against PSG in the Champions League semi-final where I was sat by their bench. And everywhere, they've just went and get... And they made every department in that club the best possible. And if that meant going and get someone who was in another club to be the head of marketing because the guys was really good, of course they went to get it and they were able to do so because of the money they have. Of course, no problem. But still, they created a machine by making sure that every little detail was important. Everything, whether you're in nutrition, in marketing, in sponsorship deals, in the first team staff, in the academy, anywhere, in the administration, are you an accountant? I don't know, everything, that all of that matters because I think they realize that to be the best, you have to be the best everywhere, not just have the best starting 11, or not just have the best striker, or not have the best goalkeeper, or the best coach. It's the whole club that can drive you forward. And I think for that, they deserve a lot of credit and a lot of recognition.
I think it's easy to kind of be lulled into taking this for granted. But to win in these three of four,
and 4 and 5, even.
I think it's 4 and 6, no?
4 and 6, sorry, yeah, 4 and 6.
That's really special. But for me, what sets the Guardiola era apart from the titles Manuel Pellegrini and Mancini also won, which, again, Roberto, if you're listening, I'm not having a go at you, but you could make the case those teams were situations where they spent a lot of money, paid a ton in wages, and almost, you know, out-muscled their way, muscle the other teams to the title. That it wasn't necessarily building. I'm talking about on the pitch. Off the pitch, obviously, the club was growing.
Yeah.
Didn't say building in the same way. But now I look at this, we've said this so many times about the individual improvements of players. And I'm also struck by something. Who is the last player? And I know I probably should have told you before that, hey, Jules, think about this so you come up with. But I was thinking of the last players Manchester City signed were, I'm not saying were bad signings, but where they'd go back and say, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't do that again. Because we can come up with signings like that from the Pellegrini era and the Mancini era. But these guys, they've kind of, you know, all right, you can say Nathan Ake hasn't been great when he's played and whatever, but then it's also the other guys have been really good. Is there anybody you think that they've signed where you said like, eh, you know?
I don't know, did they overpay for Benjamin Mendy, for example, although he had two really bad injuries that maybe slowed down his progress and his improvement?
Mendy would be one, yeah.
Fernando, when he was there, who's now at Sevilla, the defensive midfielder.
Was Fernando, that was before Pep, was it?
Was it before Pep?
I don't know.
Maybe it was, yeah.
But you know, you can go back and you have Javi Garcia, you have a bunch of guys beforehand. But these guys, it seems, and obviously they've made fewer signings because they were already a more settled team. But, you know, even Riyad Mahrez, you know, when they signed him, I thought, it's a lot of money, like this guy. Like, you know, there was a sense, you know, he was great at Leicester when he was a star. But And even after he arrived, his first seasons, I was like, okay, so you're a nice complimentary guy, but, you know, the stars are De Bruyne. And, but then he comes up huge in his games down the stretch.
Yeah.
He takes over the team.
Maybe Nolito?
Nolito would be one. Nolito would be one. But that is a tremendous track record. And I think it shows how Cheeky and Pep are very much on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think that we have to give a little bit of credit to him as well.
Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, and I think Ferran Soriano is doing a good job. And again, you might disagree and you might not like the way they do business. And yeah, of course. But certainly, and, you know, you spend 50 million on a lot of fullbacks between Walker and Cancelo and Mendy and, you know, John Stones, if you go through defenders, and then Diaz and all of that. But at some point, to create a team like this, you need to go and buy players. You get some right, some wrong, like every other
player. But they've gotten a lot fewer wrong, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they got fewer wrong. What I'm fascinating for example, Gab, is that Ruben Dias was never the priority, okay? There was Koulibaly first, when they saw that it was almost impossible with De Laurentiis to, for different reasons. They went to Jules Koundé. They had the first offer with Jules Koundé that was rejected by Sevilla and by Monchi. And they said, like, is it worth for us to go above that price that we set for Jules Koundé? Who is the next option down the line? And that was Ruben Dias. And you just think, what would have happened to them this season had Jules Koundé signed? Maybe exactly the same. Maybe Koundé could have had a very similar impact than Ruben Dias. Or maybe not. And maybe then we'd be sat here and talk differently about, it was a mistake to get Koundé. Maybe they should have got someone else. So sometimes it's just even a bit of luck or a bit of, maybe luck is the wrong word, but a bit of, like, I don't know. Yeah, luck in a way, or just to find that destiny or coincidence happens and it turns out that it's a much better move for you than it would have been had your first choice or second choice happened.
Yeah, and it's difficult to tell also, you know, because we've praised Pep for making players better. How much is it picking the right guy, and how much is it picking a guy who might not have been the right guy if he didn't come back? I look at Cancelo, and obviously he's expensive in terms of headline figure. Mm-hmm. I mean, Danilo would have been one that I think you would describe. Maybe you don't do that one again.
Yeah.
But then they're smart. I hadn't thought of Danilo before, but then they're smart and they manage to work a Danilo for Cancelo deal, which ends up means you can get Cancelo for a lot less.
Mm.
But even Cancelo, you know, when he was in Italy, look, he's really talented, but the guy can't defend. And, you know, he gets lost in games and whatever. And then they turned him into a guy who is a tremendous attacking weapon at the back and also doesn't often leave you exposed defensively.
Yeah, you're right. And so, I think Juan Malillo, who, you know, we talked about him on the show already, but he came in to replace Arteta. He's been one of Pep's mentor.
That's another tremendous part of the story. You go from the young heir apparent, right? Yeah. To, let me go bring in a mentor.
Yeah, it's completely like a father figure. You know, Pep went to play in Mexico just to play in a Sinaloa in a team that Juanma was managing. Just to be there and to learn even more. It's incredible. And I think the work that Lilo has done with Gundogan, with Cancelo, but overall, they've played every 3 days, Gab, this season. If you count the amount of days in the season and the amount of games,
and they won 21 games in a row at one point.
And they changed every single team apart from once. So only twice they played the same team 2 games in a row. And I think that sort of man management that Juan Malillo has done, and Pep Guardiola and the rest of the staff with those players, is just tremendous. How do you go on a run like this since the turn of the year, by changing and tweaking every single game? Can you imagine how your collective strength must be and how big to be able to do that and keep that consistency despite changing players? It's remarkable.
I think we're in the presence of something really, really special, which again, we might just kind of fully appreciate when we look back through the lens of history 5 or 10 years down the road. And as I said, I think we're in a situation now where we're able to completely separate it from the issues with the ownership and financial fair play and CAS and all the other things that, you know, I think make a lot of people uncomfortable. Yeah. That hasn't gone away. People are still very aware of that. But it doesn't change a fact that the people running the football side of the club have taken that and they have multiplied the resources they were given. And that is a sign of a great job. Mm-hmm.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Arsenal beat Chelsea 1-0 on the back of an errant back pass from my boy Jorginho. Jules, it's 3 points, which theoretically keeps their Europa League dreams alive. But why was Arteta so grumpy afterwards?
I don't know. Maybe he thought that he got a bit of stick before that was undeserved, and that game and that win, that performance, I guess, sort of.
I'm sorry, you're like 10th in the table, right? You got so embarrassed, whatever. Now. You're in mid-table, right? You were higher last year. I'm sorry, you will get sick.
It's a big win. First time they do a double over Chelsea since the 2003-04 season. You know, this is considering the situation and the context and the bad results that they've just had, this is positive, at least. Of course, there's still so much work to be done.
Why you got to be grumpy afterwards?
I don't know.
Well, you said the things had been misinterpreted, blah, blah, blah. It was about your 100, whatever. Well, move on. But look, as the game itself is concerned, they could have easily lost this, yes?
Yes, I think they can play many, many more times this game and not win it. But hey, they won, regardless of the way they did it, and I think it's a breath of fresh air for them, which they really, really needed. And speaking of Chelsea, how big a blow is this gap for the hope to being back into the Champions League next season, finishing on that top in the top four places?
Well, it seemed to me as if they were dead certs to be there, but the combination of the Leicester win, the games in hand for Liverpool, and they'll get two bites of the cherry because, lest we forget, City haven't won the Champions League yet. So they can be back in by winning the Champions League.
True.
But, of course, they won't know that until later. I think a lot hinges, obviously, they've got the huge game against Leicester coming up.
Next week, I think
that's going to be... That's going to be the main discriminant. You know, there's no margin for error on that one. Atletico Madrid take a massive step towards the title, beating Real Sociedad 2-1. Jules, we wait for Real Madrid to play tonight at Granada, but this is maybe Simeone's toughest test in the run-in, and he should feel good, right? Because they came out there, they were aggressive, they got 2-0 lead.
And I think you saw his reaction at full-time, Simeone, where really you could feel that it was a very significant win because Real Sociedad played well. I thought at times really good football. Same with Atletico. The first half, fantastic. And then when they had to fight for it, grind out the win with Oblak in goal, with the defense, I think they came up big. And they could easily have won this one 4-2 or 5-3 because they had that many chances. Yeah. Luis Suarez could have easily had a hat-trick in that game. And yet, it's just a 2-1 win. But I think he means so much to them. And now you said, you're right, Osasuna to come up and Real Valladolid on the last game of the season, which are two games that really they should not drop points. And much easier than what the game that Real Madrid and Barcelona have.
The big challenge is, will Valladolid be safe by then? Will they give them if Valladolid are down or safe or whatever? If there's faith as a side, I think that could have a big impact. But nice to see Carrasco, by the way, with his lovely skill and his weaker foot.
Yeah. And Marco Llorente, just quickly. I mean, there's not many players this season in the five big leagues who have more than 10 goals and 10 assists. He's one of them. And to see him running still in the 90th minute, going on every ball, those players win you titles as well.
You love Marco Llorente.
I do. Juventus beat Sassuolo 3-1 to stay alive in their run for Champions League qualification places, although it's obviously still out of their hands because everybody else still won. But, Gab, did they look better than they did against Milan?
They look better than they looked against Milan in the second half because they were terrible. But they didn't look great when, the Sassuolo missed the penalty.
Yeah.
They could have had more goals. Buffon had to come up big. In the end, they get the 3-1. You move on. But that's all you can really ask for right now. They obviously are motivated, but they're certainly not clicking.
Yeah.
Paulo Dybala and Cristiano Ronaldo, in fact, both scored their 100th goal in that game. Obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo did it in fewer matches than Dybala did. Both are out of contract in 2022, and there are rumors Juve wouldn't mind if Cristiano left in the summer. And maybe Cristiano wouldn't mind either. Jules, how do you see it?
For me, it's only down to one thing, Gab. If there's no Champions League football for Juventus next season, Cristiano Ronaldo cannot stay. He cannot play Europa League football. This is someone who still has high ambition, high expectation of himself, of his team, of his club. He cannot settle for second best. I cannot see it. So if they don't finish top four, which, as we said, it's not in their own hands, I could easily see him saying, listen.
Juve reportedly wanting 25 million euros.
Because that's how Cristiano. they would not make a loss.
It has to do with amortization.
Yeah, amortization.
But they're going to save themselves a ton on his wages. It's 65 million, that's not going to be on their books. So
and no one's going to pay 25 million for him right now.
I think they've got to come down.
But hey, as we said, the romantic in us would love him to go to Sporting, play in the Champions League with Sporting, and finish his career that way. Gab, one guy who will live in the summer for sure is Gigi Buffon. He's 43. He saved a penalty against Berardi and Sassuolo in that huge game on Wednesday night and says he wants to keep playing. Can he? Where? Parma? We talk about romanticism.
I didn't like it when he went back to Juve. A, because it's Juve, but B, because of this thing about, oh yeah, and then I'll get just enough games to go and set the record. It's just chintz. You shouldn't do that. He's good enough to play every week not for a great team, perhaps, but he should do it. There's suggestions of MLS, a suggestion of him dropping to Serie B, the Gulf. He's one of those guys who's earned the right to do what he wants to do. But what I don't want to see is him getting crumbs. I also think should there be a regime change at Juventus, you might want to think long and hard. Maybe there's a role for him within the club.
Yeah.
But Italian clubs have a long history of treating their star players badly when they leave, whether it's Bergomi or Del Piero or Totti. So, Leicester City beat Manchester United 3-1 as the crazy scheduling forces Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to make 10 changes. Jules, did you learn anything about United?
Not really, Gab, apart from the fact that Mason Greenwood is still fantastic. Even in a C team, he still finds a way
That's the only guy who played the last game. So tell me about Alonga, Amayala.
Alonga, whose father, do you remember his father? Joseph played for Cameroon at the World Cup in...
Oh, it's the same guy.
Yeah, 1998, right. I think, something like that. We saw Ahmad Diallo again, who gave the assist for the Greenwood goal, who we have, you and I, high hopes for, and I think at the club as well. You know, you saw... Players like Donny van de Beek, who doesn't play much, and then he's a bit struggling in a game like this. But hey, listen, I think...
Nobody cared. It didn't matter. Give the kids a run out. Yeah, move on.
Exactly. Speaking of Leicester, I know Brendan Rodgers will say that they will put in 100% effort in both their games against Chelsea, the FA Cup final on Saturday, and then the league clash next Tuesday in the Premier League. But Gan, one is surely more important than the other, right, in those two games?
Yeah, and... it's getting back in the Champions League, which is more important. I know people are going
to
be romantic.
Don't want them to win the first FA Cup since like 1964 or something or whatever it is.
Who cares? They won the Premier League in 2016.
Yeah.
Right? FA Cups are nice here and there, you know, but teams that are just outside the elite win it. If you get back in the Champions League and you have those funds and you hang on to your stars for another season, which we know that they can do with the backing, then you can really start thinking about moving forward and being a power, and which would allow you to keep Rodgers and all your stars. If you have to play Europa League next season and they took a hit like everybody else in the pandemic, then chickens come home to roost. I think it would be far more meaningful if they finished top four. Look, they could lose to Chelsea and still finish top four, right? It's a possibility. It's an either or. But there's no question that in his mind, the focus has to be on the second game against Chelsea, not the first one. Doesn't mean you rotate or whatever, but...
Top four is a much bigger achievement than winning the FA
Cup
anyway.
No question about that. Paris Saint-Germain are through to the French Cup final. You shouldn't be celebrating some penalties against Montpellier. Come on. My boy Moise Kean converting the final one. Jules, for a minute, I thought the curse of the winless Pochettino, the one where all the haters would be like, oh, Poch has never won anything. He still hasn't won anything, but it was going to look really ugly.
God, yeah, he would. And especially how good and dominant this PSG team was for most of the game. They should have won 6-2, 6-1 even, because the first goal from Montpellier is an incredible goal. But Laborde can try again another 100 times and he will never score the same goal that he did against Navas. So they won it. They deserve to win. It's their 7th French Cup final in a row. They won 5 out of the last 6. This would be the 7th. Incredible domination again in that competition. But we see they play Minos, Rumilly, or Bigos, Monaco. Milan beat up Torino 7-0 and take a big step towards the Champions League qualification. As my boy Theo Hernandez gets 2 goals and Ante Rebic gets a hat-trick to finish things off. Gab, they did it without Zlatan, so it's another opportunity for you to tell me that they should not have extended this deal for next season.
Absolutely not. They shouldn't have extended it at that number. They don't need him. Donnarumma was more important. It's as simple as that. But that said, it shows you what the kids can do, what the rest of the team is. Yep. Enough of this Zlatan's our leader thing. You want to be a leader, you come here, you take a pay cut, and you show this. You don't need the money. Fortunately, just a one-year extension. Virgil van Dijk has ruled himself out of Euro 2020 to focus on his fitness for Liverpool. Jules, right decision?
Right decision. Wise decision, Gab. We saw players with similar injuries than him who tried to come back too quickly and then had a really bad setback. He didn't want to do that. I think Klopp probably encouraged him as well not to do that. We saw the comments that he had last week. I think it's a shame for Holland and for Van Dijk, but I think it's the right decision, definitely. UEFA have opened disciplinary proceedings against Juventus, Real Madrid and Barcelona, which could see them being banned from European football. And at the same time, a court in Madrid has reaffirmed the injunction against UEFA and its monopolistic practices. Gab, just as we predicted, this is going to the lawyers, which is a shame, really.
Just as we predicted, just as we wrote. It's a shame because lawyers are involved and unfortunately they're necessary evil here. Again, I've been told time and again, you know, UEFA are on really shaky ground if they try to ban them.
Yeah.
Equally, there's no telling what the injunction, once it winds into the court. Remember, people thought, well, Bosman's always going to fail. This could be a real game changer if they get it through, but it's going to take a long, long time, and I just don't want it to go down this route.
Yeah.
Emerick Laporte's international future is with Spain, apparently, not France. Jules, I find this absurd.
Yeah.
Please explain. I it's just crazy. I know you're going to say Jules Koundé, Kimpembe, whatever, but did he do to annoy Deschamps? Did he like Deschamps a tweet by Karim Benzema or something?
That's a good point. I don't think so. Deschamps called him up 3 times. Never played him, but called him up. Was part of the squad.
Why not give him a cab just to lock him in?
I know. I don't know. I don't think he I think he was a bit lonely, Laporte, in those international breaks when he went with the team. I think Deschamps didn't like the fact that maybe he was not mixing up too much. That in terms
what
of...
He's not mixing with this. What is
I know. I'm just telling you what I was told and briefed and what I saw as well. And I think maybe for the unity of the squads, maybe he didn't feel like he fitted in. I don't know. I don't
start
understand.
Counting. French centre-backs who, when fully fit, are better than Emerick Laporte. Here. No, please. Stop me, okay? Raphael Varane, when fully fit.
Yeah.
Upamecano, theoretically.
Yeah.
Am I missing somebody?
Kimpembe, thank you.
You take Kimpembe ahead of City fans. You heard him. You take Kimpembe. Somebody named Presnel.
Not much more, but yeah.
Yeah,
you know. But I think that's not the point.
Jules Koundé. Maybe one day theoretically, yeah.
Konaté, Longley.
Yeah,
Acqua,
keep going, Longley.
Would have taken him.
Come on, man.
But Deschamps doesn't like him, clearly. Otherwise, this would not happen.
Somebody should explain to him, Deschamps. This is not your own personal national team.
Who won the World Cup? You or him?
Who won the World Cup?
Yeah.
Pogba, Mbappe,
you him.
Whatever.
He did. He thinks he knows best, and we will see.
One cap, and you lock him up.
I know, man. It appears almost certain that the Premier League will get permission from the government to roll over the domestic TV deal for another 3 years. Gab, why is this so important? Which means that BT Sport, Amazon, BBC, and Sky just keep basically what we saw this year.
Yes.
Right?
I think BBC might lose some of those televised games that they got, which because of the pandemic.
Yeah, sorry, I meant for much of
that. So this is really important because under the law here in Britain, you have to put these out to tender. There's all sorts of government rules that says like you have to have, you know, there's different packages and you have to have bidders for them and whatever. And last time around, the value of the domestic TV rights fell by about $500 million. And let's be clear, for all those people out there talking, oh, but the global lucrative Asian markets, the global TV deal, blah, blah, blah. No, Britain, they make a ton of money from one market, which is the domestic TV market. And it already went down last time. And the real risk was that they put it out to tender and it was going to go down even further. So what they did was they got a concession. That suits the TV companies because at least now they can budget. They know that they don't have to worry about it. They don't need to overbid, underbid. They gave concessions. The Premier League agreed to give more money to the Football League to increase their solidarity payments to them. And you get a little bit of certainty. You get maybe less money than you would have had, but maybe you end up getting more money because there's no telling what would have happened if this had gone out to auction.
Yeah.
So it brings a bit of stability. Atalanta beat Benevento 2-0, and they too are on track for Champions League place. Mm-hmm. Jules, I think we need to get accustomed to thinking of them as not just a Champions League team, but a Champions League knockout round team.
And a title contenders. I said at the start of the season, Gab, that I would love it if they could win Serie A at some point. I really believe that this season they could They could be close, and in a way, they are quite close. If they finish second behind Inter, this you know very efficient Inter side for certainly the second part of the season, then it would be a really very, very good achievement, very good season. I really wish they could go and win it one day. I would love Gasperini to win it. I know you've got issues with him, but
I'd love the club to win it and their fans to win it. Gasperini,
what they're doing is great. But yeah, you're right. They are now a team that should qualify, will qualify for the last 6 years.
And they've redone their stadium, which they almost basically never got to play in.
Yeah, exactly.
So that could bring in more revenue. They do have some money. Obviously, they were hit like everybody else. So phenomenal situation to be in.
Inter beat Roma 3-1 in the dead rubber on Wednesday night. But Gab, were you surprised to see Conte's tantrum against Lautaro Martinez? And things are still difficult below the surface, right at the club.
I was not surprised to see his tantrum.
You knew it was going to happen.
Like, I don't think Lautaro is particularly upset by it either. He's worked with Conte every day. And, you know, when you're wound tighter than a drum, you know, again, dead rubber game. But it shows you that they care so much, and he's so intense, you know.
Exactly. Details.
Yeah, look, Conte's the kind of guy who'd blow up in your face if you played him at rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that. Behind the scenes, the financial situation is still really, really perilous. They're close to a deal, but they haven't done it yet to refinance at $250 million, which they need with two different hedge funds. It's uncertain what Suning are going to do now that the Chinese government effectively such a stake in them, and they have this massive wage bill that they need to cut, and they need Conte to commit. So at some point, the stars have to align, and Conte is going to have to sit down and be like, look, I need to make it work with these players. The players will need to take either a pay cut, or because there's 2 months' wages that they haven't been paid.
Yeah.
So one of the ideas is, you know, do you spread them over next season? Okay, fine. But here's the thing. If you're Matias Vecino, let's say, and you say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll spread them over next season.
He scored, by the way.
Finally got to play. And then you leave, that means it's money you never get back. So it's a complicated, complicated situation that they're in. Borussia Dortmund play Leipzig in the German Cup final Thursday evening, and their CEO, Hans-Joachim Watzke, says Erling Braut Haaland will see what I'm doing here?
Yeah.
Will definitely stay another season. Jules, do we believe him or does his nose get...
Stop talking about it. Stop
he
saying
He keeps getting
every
asked
week.
About it.
Every week he keeps saying like he's staying. I don't care. Okay, good for you. Stop talking about him. Focus on next season. Focus on the end of the season to finish in top
it's
four.
It's not his fault, the poor guy.
Win the Pokal and then let's move on because I'm bored of what is Erling Haaland going to do? Are Dortmund going to let him go or not? The release clause...
Yeah, we should talk Jadon Sancho United instead. Exactly. I will say this about the release clause. I think if I'm Watzke now and if I'm Mino Raiola, and maybe this is happening behind the scenes. So, again, for those who don't know, he has a release clause that kicks in
next summer.
In the summer of 2022, where he can leave for, we believe it's 70 million.
Yeah.
Jan Åge Fjørtoft says it's more than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's still a lot less than what he's really worth, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you're Dortmund, it's stupid to keep him another year, clearly, right? Because you're going to lose out on some money. But I wonder if it doesn't make sense, if I'm Mino Raiola, if I go knock and say, hey, Hans-Joachim, how about we give my boy a new contract? How about we give him a raise, and then maybe we increase the release clause, or maybe we get rid of it entirely if it's big enough, and we negotiate a nice commission for myself and for Alfie Haaland. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It's something that might actually suit both parties, right? Because he's a better player than the player they signed.
Yeah.
Right? He turned out, definitely. He surpassed even those crazy expectations.
Yeah, in 18 months. Yeah, definitely. I like the idea.
Napoli continue to control their own... Oh, no, this is your question for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Napoli continue to control their own destiny in the Champions League race after spanking Udinese 5-1, Gab. They've scored 100 goals this season despite playing without Osimhen for 4 months and Mertens for 3 months. And still, Gattuso looks like he's going to leave at the end of the season, which is crazy.
It's bizarre. Like I said, I don't think I would not have Gattuso as my manager because of my vision, my vision of football and what I want. I would like to have Gattuso as my friend. I would like to have Gattuso in battle with me. I mean, this is a guy
I first met
Rino Gattuso when he was 18 years old. Okay, we go way back, many, many years ago. However, for whatever reason, it looks like we've passed the point of no return with De Laurentiis. Gattuso. What he's done this season has been absolutely tremendous, tremendous players coach, but also showed he can play both defensive football and attacking football as a 100-goal show. They're talking Max Allegri now. I don't know if...
With that team, with those players?
Good players. Max Allegri wins things with good players. You know, why not? If you're talking about them pushing on towards a title, I'll be really interested to see where Gattuso goes if he does get cut loose. Sevilla win a hard-fought game against Valencia 1-0. Jules, they won't win La Liga. But this is huge from Lopetegui and special.
It is. It is. And Youssef El-Nizri scored the winning goal and he's had a wonderful season. And I think Lopetegui, again, we talked a lot, Gab, about managers who improve players, seeing where he came from and what Lopetegui has done with him this season at this club and others too. It's just fantastic. And if they can, you know, finish top four for sure, which they will do now, we know, but go ahead of a Barcelona or ahead of Real Madrid, which is still possible in a way, it would be even a much better achievement and great. And I just like what Lopetegui is doing at the club.
Right. He's done a tremendous job. I think his name will be linked to more big clubs going forward.
Jesse Marsch will leave RB Salzburg, having won the league and cup double in Austria, just like he did last season. Gab, where do you think, how far can he take Leipzig when he moves there in the summer?
Like, obviously, he's not Nagelsmann because they're only... No. They skipped. Julian. By the way, I didn't comment on this last time. And I feel terrible doing it because, as you can tell from the way I dress, I don't like it when people make fun of the way you dress. However, one of the many things... I know we're digressing on Nagelsmann. He really doesn't care.
No.
Did you see that weird, gigantic coat that he was that he wore against Dortmund?
He's had it before. It's crazy. There's some worst suits. The suits is the worst. You know,
the suits. I don't know if he's like got a friend who's a tailor, like designs clothes, uses some app to. What?
Because there's a point where he got so much criticism. Let's put it that way. I was going to say something else. That he said, okay, no, I understand. I will change it. I will dress better. And yet we still see the same stuff that he's wearing.
That coat that he wears, which I'm sure is very fancy, very expensive. It is possibly the least flattering
thing with you on that.
That you can wear. It's like a giant sack.
Yeah. Sleeping bag.
I'm sure Jesse Marsch dresses better because
he's American.
And he's from Wisconsin, of course, which is known for their high fashion.
Of course.
I'm kidding, Jesse. look, I think what's interesting is Leipzig is obviously a system, right? It's been part of a large organization. Mm. We've seen him. He's operated within this operation from New York to Salzburg. You've got tremendous young players. You still have to make it work. I think he can do well because he knows the landscape. He knows the language. And he has so much support around him.
Yeah.
You know, this is... I did an interview with Philipp Lahm recently, which will go up on the website soon. And he talked about the differences with German clubs, about why they can keep changing managers, put young guys in, not, you know, without missing a beat, which in England you can't do. Because in England, if you're the manager, you know, you're God. You've got all the responsibility and you're out on the firing line.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. And it makes sense with some guys, Klopp and Pep, absolute power. Other situations, I saw Unai Emery at Arsenal and now Arteta at Arsenal, far too alone, personally. Far not enough public support anyway, not enough messaging. Marsch isn't going to have that problem. So I think he can do very well. I think Champions League, whatever. At some point, I want to see Jesse Marsch in a non... He's still young, so he's still got... In a non-Leipzig environment. Yeah. I want to see what can you do when you're, you know, outside the mothership. But this is another step up in his career, and good luck
to
him.
Good for him, yeah.
Jules, there was some uncertainty about the Champions League final as of this morning, Thursday morning. It still said it was going to be played at the Atatürk Stadium in Istanbul. We know that's not true. It was a question about whether they would move it to England or whether they move it to Portugal. It's going to be in Portugal. It's not going to be in England, in part because they weren't able to guarantee quarantine-free access to UEFA officials and sponsors and whatever. It's a reasonable decision.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's common sense, Gab. It would have been great for all English fans to have it at Wembley, but maybe it would have looked, certainly for UEFA's liking, a bit too much Anglo-English final, like almost like a Premier League game, which is true. At least in Porto, English fans from England can travel there because it's on their green list, so they can go. You could also have no problem for sponsors.
It's only going to be 8,000 or 10,000 anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's still limited, but it would feel maybe more like a Champions League final because it's abroad and you go there and all of that. And if it'd been at Wembley, but it's the right decision.
And you won't have to move the promotion playoffs from Wembley, which I know you really care about.
I care deeply about. Yeah.
Who's going to be in the Championship playoff final?
So I think I would like Barnsley to qualify because...
Yeah, I miss their glamour in the Premier League, you're right.
No, but because Valerian Ismaël, the French manager, is doing an amazing job.
Former Crystal Palace star,
yeah,
Valerian
Ismaël. No, Brentford have been so close in recent seasons that maybe they deserve a shot.
They're about due, right? Are Brentford still managed by the guy with two first names, Thomas Frank?
Exactly, yeah, Thomas Frank is there. And Ivan Toney, their striker...
Who scored a million goals this season? Been linked with a
player of the season, probably with Buendia from Norwich.
People are like Ben Rama, who? Ollie Watkins, who? We've got Ivan Toney.
If Bournemouth were to win this playoff final, semi-final, and then final, then you would have Norwich, Watford, and Bournemouth going straight back up, which is really rare to go down and straight back up into the Premier League.
Norwich with the same manager, of course, Daniel Farke, I believe. Whereas
and
Watford,
Bournemouth not with the same manager.
Who's managing Bournemouth now?
It's Jonathan Woodgate.
Woody. Nice one. Former Real Madrid and Middlesbrough star, Jonathan Woodgate, no less.
Exactly. Sporting are champions of Portugal for the first time in 19 years, Gab. It's very important, of course, and the duopoly of Benfica and Porto has been broken again. How impressive is this, though, Gab? Because probably the main reason why they've won this is their young manager, Ruben Amorim, who's only 36.
Yeah, and who I believe they paid a big bundle as well to get him over
to Braga.
From Braga. I think it's very impressive for another reason too. You know, with Sporting, I look at this, and obviously we all talk about the brilliant academy, and they do have some young talent. They also have a whole bunch of retreads and people who Sebastian Coates, João Mário, you know, people who are kind of like dumped there from other clubs, and I'm not saying, look, this happens all the time. This is the reality of football. I'm lifting the lid here on this.
But
once you get inside the top 10, 12 clubs, you have to get creative and agents pace players and whatever. But, you know, player for player, I don't think the squad is better than Benfica and Porto.
No, definitely
I
not.
Think the real value added in this team comes from Ruben Amorim, from the environment that was created around them. And can we just relaunch the story from the Portuguese press, because it would be so cool, that Cristiano's family wants him to come back?
Yeah, do you see the celebrations in Madeira with all the shirt, his mum, all the uncles, all the family? It would be amazing. I think it would be amazing. And can you, how much it would mean to them as a family?
What if Cristiano were to pay the 25 million euros himself to go back?
That would be
Sporting.
Even better.
Even
better.
I always talk about this, right? Like, Cristiano's going to be remembered forever as one of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah.
If on top of that,
he
goes into his pocket, takes out 25 million, and says, "Here, Juve. I'm going home to sport. It would be
if
you did that, like, seriously, you would be in the top pantheon of athletes, not just for your achievements on the pitch, but for your status off the pitch. Think about it, Cristiano.
Yeah, please, Cristiano, do it.
It would be cool. Ajax have chosen a novel way to thank their fans for winning the Dutch Eredivisie. Let's give them some love, because I thought this was brilliant, Jules.
Amazing, yeah. So when you win the Eredivisie, you win a shield. And what they did, they melted the shield to make little stars. They melted with other stuff, but to make little stars, basically, and give to their 42,000 season ticket holders, who obviously haven't been able to watch them live in grounds this season because of the pandemic. So as a reward for, you know, staying with them, they send them that little star, which I think is an amazing touch from an amazing club.
I love this. This is absolutely brilliant. More clubs should consider doing it rather than just having a silly replica at home.
Yeah.
You know, in your club shop, that you can charge people to have a picture taken with it. This is actually meaningful.
Very special. The Columbus Crew have decided to change their name to Columbus SC, Gab. Many MLS teams have done this before, but this one seems a bit pretty silly, no?
It's really silly. It supposedly makes it more appealing or credible as a club brand. But this is just beyond stupid. Now, it's one thing. American clubs, you know, MLS clubs have done this. If I think Dallas originally were the Dallas Burn, so they became FC Dallas, and Kansas City became, you know, were the Kansas City Whiz, I believe, and then they became Sporting KC. Mm-hmm. It's fine, but this is just dumb because it's just one thing to do it a few years ago, but the Columbus Crew are established as the Columbus Crew. You actually have something original about it, right? Yeah. Columbus SC sounds like some ode to colonialism now. I'm kidding. I know that's the name of the city, but still. Why? Why would you do this? There's been a backlash from the fans.
Of course.
I hate it. I like it when things are original. You know, at the beginning, all those MLS names sounded contrived, like the New York / New Jersey Metro Stars. Yeah. That's stupid and contrived. That's fine. Now you've moved on. But you don't need to do it. You were established as a Columbus Crew. You fought a battle to continue your existence in town when that evil guy Precourt or whatever his name is tried to take you to Austin. Why? Why you gotta mess with this? And also Columbus SC, what, to make it different from FC? Come on, man. Come on. Maybe be proud of your history.
Yeah, exactly.
Know who you are.
Exactly.
All right, enough of that. But Jules, we gotta come back on Monday, right? Because we're down to the wire in so many leagues.
Exactly.
So we'll be doing that. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.